Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 149 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Hoffer. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
You know what? I'm doing okay. A little tired. Just want the weekend to be longer, but, you know, doing okay. How are you doing
longer
today?
Weekends would be great. I am... And if I sound it, I'm recovering from a little bit of a cold, still a little bit stuffed up, but feeling much better than I was a few days ago. So, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. You know, to get more time, did you ever watch the show Out of This World in like the late 80s or whatever? It was about a teenage girl who was an alien. She had power. She could stop time.
I mean, that sounds familiar. It's quite possible I did.
Yeah, the dreams that I had for that were just like, oh, I can just read as much as I want, or I can just take a nap. And like,
wouldn't that be nice?
So boring, but it's like, these are the things I would do with extra time, you know, just enjoy myself, sleep more, just, you know, stuff like that. Anyways, that's our,
like stopped time, nap time.
Yeah.
Sounds super clutch.
Perfect. And this concludes our 80s nostalgia corner. Thank you for joining us for it. Let's continue on to the actual show.
Wait, I should add something. Transformers, the animated show. Ninja Turtles.
Ninja Turtles were more 90s, I think.
Was that 90s? It feels like so long ago now that...
Real
Transformers, I know, was 80s. I know Transformers was 80s.
That was.
G.I. Joe. There you go.
Yeah, real blood Ghostbusters and all the way. That was my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. We could have our own podcast to talk about all the really good animated shows of the 80s and 90s. But we won't, because this is D&D Discussions. So we've got a few things, really fun things we're going to talk about tonight. And
predicted. 1987.
As predicted.
Had to throw that out there because I know
Ninja Turtles. Yes. Yeah,
someone would have corrected us. Just want to throw that out there. Okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
Phenomenal. No. That's vindicating. As predicted, the day after our last episode came out, Wizards dropped more news. It's just something that will happen all the time, so we just don't even try and plan for it anymore. Anyways, though, it's really actually quite fun news. So they posted about Q1 of 2026 partnered content release schedule. And so this is by Watsi Laura, who was referenced, I think, once or twice in the AMA as like the third party coordinator, you know, distributor. So she says, "Happy New Year. This post kicks off an ongoing conversation about upcoming partner content releases and our general vision for how we welcome partner creators to our platform. Up until now, we've been dropping most of these releases without prior announcement," which is very true. "While this does allow the buzz to surprise and excite players, we've heard your feedback. Starting this year, we will be publishing our partner content roadmap for D&D Beyond every quarter. Whether you're a player, dungeon master, or both, our intent is to give you clearer visibility into what's coming so you can plan and decide what releases you want to bring to the table." So this is actually really cool. I like this a lot, and I hope if this is like part of the, you know, greater transparency around D&D Beyond and such, big thumbs up.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Big thumbs up from me. So she continues, "We want to start by talking about the people who keep D&D growing beyond any single book release. You. Our community makes the world of D&D come to life. Dungeon Masters, players, creators have always been its heart, and we love the creativity. Looking ahead, we are excited to continue welcoming partnered content to D&D Beyond to support the imagination and hard work of the community." This is really cool, too, and I'm sure third-party content, especially around being able to integrate all of the individual books and being able to... sort them well and organize on the site is one of the big reasons for the backend rework, among many other things. So starting in Q1, January 27th, which it just dropped, and they had actually a few articles out about it from Keith Baker, "Exploring Eberron, This was a, I believe, a DM's Guild release. Or either that or like an addition to the 2024 Exploring Eberron, or the extra Eberron supplement from last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it dives deeper into the world's history, cultures, religions, philosophies, lots of lore, a few new species, feats, and subclasses, including options built to complement the newly released Artificer. And that's all integrated into the character builder. So that's super cool. Yep. They've got the Pugilist class. And this is a DM's Guild class. And we've probably talked about it before a while ago. But this is coming early February. Offers a distinct flavorful take on melee combat with subclasses that lean to the brawlers, boxers, and other fist-first fighters. So this is a full new class that is going to be in the character builder as well.
Yeah, we can always use more of those. And I love the fact that it is very distinct compared to the monk, which is also, you know, or can potentially be a melee combat, you know, like fist fighting thing. So I like that this is like different style. This is like Jon Favreau versus Scarlett Johansson in Iron Man 2 when they're fighting down the hallway. You know, different,
exactly.
Different flavors of things.
And I think this really just shows how much design space there is in full classes, because you could have just done this into a monk subclass, but there is a fully distinct idea for this brawler type character with subclasses integrated that is very, it stands alone from monk.
Exactly. Like so, just theming, I like that overall, like a boxer versus, you know, a martial artist. It's an entirely different culture, entirely different idea of training, stuff like that. So the fact
that wouldn't fit into a monk subclass.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sure, you have drunken boxing, but that's very different than actually like boxing. So yeah. Different kind of stuff. And I love the fact that it's kind of split out. And like you said, just really gives the not the illusion, but just the actuality of having the ability to break out into different concepts and ideas of, you know, similar, possibly mechanically based things.
Exactly. More classes, good.
Yes.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
More design space for everybody.
More classes, more subclasses, like options, always good.
Yeah, more options. Next, in late February, we have Faster Purple Worm, Everybody Dies, Volume 1. You may have seen the short-lived show. I believe it was on one of the like free streaming services for a little while. There's several episodes for it. But this is by Beetle and Grimm, popular collection of level 1 one-shots from the chaotic comedy series Faster Purple Worm, Kill Kill. It's got quick play maps, so that you can jump right in. And those are very much just like you throw level 1 characters against
horrific
higher CR. Yeah, higher CR stuff. It's meant to be a comedy silliness. So that's fun that's coming to D&D Beyond as well.
Yeah, I've been able to see some of those. In fact, on Amazon,
oh, did you watch some?
Yeah, on Amazon Prime, they have like a 24-hour D&D channel. And that pops up every now and then. And I mean, they're hysterical. It's just,
yeah, I've seen an episode crazy. Or two.
Yeah. Fun stuff.
There's one with Matthew Lillard. That was really good.
Yep. The Seth Green one is really good.
Seth Green. Yep. Yeah. A lot of, they brought in a lot of like celebrity guest stars for those, along with like the seasoned D&D players you might see, mm-hmm. Around your normal actual plays and stuff. So,
yeah.
Very cool. Then we have Helena's Guide to Monster Hunting Part 2 that is coming in early March. The tongue. This is by Loot Tavern. And this is the anticipated second half of the Monster Hunting Guide. And to deliver the best possible experience within our digital tools, this release has been thoughtfully adapted to support the kind of monster hunting gameplay fans of the series love, while using D&D Beyond's time-saving features to their utmost. It does note that they will not be including the Tamer as a class option in the character builder due to the site's current tech limitations. They will also not be including the Tamer section in the compendium. This was a joint decision between Wizards and Loot Tavern. We're listening to feedback and we'll provide updates if this changes. So my guess is that might show up post backend rework.
Yeah. And
this is part of the actual book.
And hopefully that anybody who owns the book will get that just added to their account. I would assume so.
That would, but yeah, that would be the hope.
That would, I mean, who knows? Business is going to business, but I would assume that it, since it is part of the actual manual, I would think that they would do that. But
yeah, 100%. And then finally, at the end of March, the Griffin Saddlebag Book 1, which is funny because Book 2 is already there. after launching two books, after launching Book 2 on D&D Beyond last year, we're excited to bring Book 1. This release rounds out the collection with more beautifully illustrated magic items ready to drop directly into your game. I will say, Griffin's Saddlebag makes fantastic magic items. If you're looking for extra magic items, both Book 1 and 2, very, very good. Lots of really, really cool stuff in them. So this is a great addition.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want more magic items? It's like, you know, if I can get a book that is oops, all magic items, there you go.
And then they finalize the article by saying we're exploring partner content to add to D&D Beyond. We're thoughtful about the creators we bring in and the experiences we present. We look for projects that integrate smoothly with our evolving play tools and bring something distinctive to your table, whether that's mechanical depth, narrative richness, or a balance of both. It isn't a rigid formula. The evaluation of partner content is approached with care, curiosity, and a two-way relationship. Our goal is to treat D&D Beyond as a curated experience, one where you can discover great partner content with confidence. This is just the beginning. We'll have more to share soon. Meanwhile, if you're excited by our particular creator's content, let us know. Thanks for being part of the journey, Laura Holman. So I like this a lot. This is a great way to do it. And I love that they're going to do this on a quarterly basis and kind of give people a heads up about what's coming. This is the kind of thing I was hoping to see when they kind of switched around the roles and new people came in and such. So bravo, more of this.
Yeah. I mean, to be completely honest, this is what you were hoping to see long before the first third party content actually showed up on D&D Beyond.
Yep.
So your wish has come true, Ryan. And you know what?
Been a long time coming.
Better place for it.
Been a long time coming, but yes, it is very exciting that I can have all this in my little curated area that I run games from. Next, just another update. You know how we talked about a ton of new people joining the Wizards D&D team last episode? There was another one that posted, I believe, January 26th. So, Taylor is joining the WotC staff as a game designer for Dungeons and Dragons. She has done a lot of, again, third-party content and has been kind of in the space for quite some time. So again, we talked about this, you know, like the minor leagues, the double A teams or whatever, fielding content and pulling people up. This is exactly what they're doing right now. And it really feels like this kind of new era, next generation, is really pulling all sorts of new people in. And this is really like the team that is building for the next generation of D&D.
Yeah.
So very exciting.
It is absolutely fantastic. You know, having just so many talented people coming in is, you know, it's exciting. It adds a lot of different perspective. It adds a lot of creativity and, you know, giving people a chance to really, you know, get their foot in and, you know, make a huge name for themselves and stuff like that is absolutely fantastic. So Taylor Navarro being added is a huge plus for everybody.
Yeah. Super, super big. This is, This is I don't know. Like I said, it feels like Justice is building his Justice League.
Wow. I mean,
wow.
It's going to be better than the movie. I'll just say that.
It's late. Give me a break.
You know what? It works. I'm happy with that. It works.
Fantastic. And speaking of Wizards of the Coast staff, we just wanted to throw up a reminder, those subclasses, those new Mystic subclasses we talked about last episode, the survey is now out. So if you have feedback on any of those subclasses, we'll have the link in the show notes. Take the survey, fill it out, let them know what you think.
Yep, it's open. As they've said before and have shown that based on feedback, they are making changes and, you know, working on towards what feels better, which is absolutely fantastic. Those surveys have helped a lot of stuff before, maybe not the Ranger, but a lot of different classes and stuff. I mean, the Druid is a perfect example of, hey, this was really bad, but all that they've done to, you know, add to it for the 2024 rules and stuff has made it a bunch better due to our feedback. So if you had a chance to try any of those Mystic subclasses, please make sure you put your feedback in, because I'm pretty sure we're all in agreement here that we just want fun things.
Yes. Yes. And I still think there is a great deal of fun that could be added to those, as we talked about last episode. So,
which is I will be very, that out as well. Very, very good diplomatic way of saying, not so great.
They need some help.
Yeah.
Need a little bit of help. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Good concepts. Just need some retooling.
Yep.
All right. So we've got two little segments that we wanted to talk about post this news. The first is a listener question that was submitted before the holidays. And obviously we had our holiday hiatus for a little while, but we wanted to come back and make sure that we hit some of these listener questions that have been submitted between our break and now. So this question reads, I realize that we are still in the middle of the 2024 rollout to all the products to get them up to the same rules. My question is, where do you go from here? What would you like to see come out product-wise that you haven't seen announced yet? Is it physical, digital, or both? It's a great question, man.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely.
We've probably talked about this many times, like not on air.
Yeah, and there is also a chance that we might have touched on this in some way on air. The point is that, you know, one of the reasons why we're at episode 149 is because this gaming sphere constantly has changes, constantly has updates, and a lot of the old stuff still matters, which I think is so much more of a good thing to point out of, you know, what hasn't been converted that you would like to see converted. But even more so just moving forward, you know, like our imaginations are here and fuel this entire gaming sphere. So it's a good question. And, you know, with that, I'm just going to jump right in right away with, you know, for me personally, what I want to see is just, and I know it just came out and it was like a huge box set kind of, but I want to see all the Spelljammer stuff just get converted to 2024, because that's what my next campaign I'm planning on doing. So I'd just like to have all that just kind of, you know, just magicked so that it's, you know, stat wise, everything's been looked at and all that stuff. But that is just purely a selfish reason. Of course, I could, you know, do a lot of that myself and, you know, update it, which is, you know, in a homebrew kind of situation, it's what I do anyway. But, you know, that extra helping hand is always a plus. So that's the first thing that I would say that I'm really wanting, personally, at least for as an update.
I was thinking about this for a little while. Obviously, I've talked about, we were just talking about third-party content, right? I want to see the other MCDM classes get pulled in. Yeah. I want to see them pull in the Beast Heart, and I want to see them pull in the Talent into D&D Beyond. That would be really, really cool. Two of my favorite subclasses, for sure. I would also like to see them pull in the Deep Magic series by Kobold Press. A lot of really, really cool spells, new spell types, and ways to cast. That would be really cool. More offerings. I would love to see them integrate Bastions into D&D Beyond and continue to support them, but ways to manage and track and build them in D&D Beyond would be huge in my mind. So I'm hoping that is one of the things that can come with the rework.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like books go, obviously more settings is never a bad thing. There's that Dark Sun rumor mill that's been rolling. I never played the original Dark Sun setting, so that is intriguing to me. The more psionic side of things. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting. And then, I mean, we really haven't had much in the way of adventures for 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true. So we had some anthology type stuff, but like we haven't, and we've had some like in the Forgotten Realms book, there's kind of small mini campaign or campaign starters and stuff, but we haven't had like a full on adventure book. Right.
Yeah.
Well, yet. I mean, so I'm hoping we see that one of those,
something that's not tied to an IP anyway. Cause I mean, you could say that the Stranger Things one, it, you know, kind of fits that, but the last real like campaign adventure that we had was Vecna, and that was before the big rule set change. So I think that is a good place to, you know, throw something in there as well. You know, just have something in there, give everybody kind of a taste of what you can do again. You know, don't get me wrong, I love the anthology books because it's easy to drop an adventure in here and there. And it, you know, really fuels a lot of imagination because there's so many different scenarios and so many different things to do in those books that, you know, it gives you a head start already. But having like a real campaign setting to go on, like, hey, this is what you get, this is what you go through, enjoy, is I think it's got to be one of the next things that's coming.
Yeah.
That being said, again, more for homebrew stuff, but going back to kind of digital wants, I would like to be able to actually create a map in the VTT. You know, instead of just, you know, taking your just a basic map and then, you know, adding, you know, stamps or stickers and stuff on it to kind of add it. I would love to have an actual map maker or, you know, some sort of design option to, you know, make world maps instead of just, you know, like a battle map or train or something like that. I think that would be something that'd be pretty
kind of like an Incarnate built in.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, don't get really me wrong. Cool. Love Incarnate. I mean, I have a yearly subscription that I've been paying for years now because I love that site. But with so much being incorporated into the D&D Beyond VTT, it would be very helpful to be able to just say, you know, with the, you know, the assets that Wizards of the Coast has, I'd like to use some of that artwork to create different types of maps and stuff. And, you know, as opposed to, you know, just kind of going with more generically themed things.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that would actually probably be a good, really good addition. I think people would use that quite a bit, especially being able to make like whip up quick battle maps, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Just straight within the tool instead of having to upload stuff.
Because, I mean, all that they have right now is like just a generic like forest or here's just, you know, dungeon floor. This would be able to give you, you know, you'd be able to put in walls or throw in, you know, environmental things and stuff like that and make it a little easier to do all that stuff with. Yeah, just, you know, something that I think would be, you know, rather nice.
Yeah, I agree. What else? Another one or two big monster books would mm-hmm. be great with more 2024 monsters.
Yeah, or monsters
that are just. yeah, just big books of foes, adversaries, would be really great. More official classes.
Yeah.
We're just kind of talking about that. We know that we assume there's potentially some sort of psionic class coming. It was in the Unearthed Arcana. Hopefully there was a lot of really good feedback on that one, because I think that one was another one where concept-wise, it's really good, and it has been done well mm-hmm. in multiple third-party things, but the actual Wizards version felt a little too stale and a little too generic. I really hope, and this kind of goes to the question, right? I hope this next year and beyond, we see bigger swings. I want to see them take bigger swings with mechanics, with content, with subclasses, just how they do stuff. We're in the second decade. Like, just go for it, right? Try mm-hmm. and expand your mechanics, expand the system. There's a lot that 5e can do. There's a lot of really cool homebrew stuff that people do that would work very well officially. So I think that's kind of the big overall thing. Take bigger swings. I want to see some really cool mechanics. I want to see some really cool monsters where they can do a lot of really neat stuff. And I think we've seen that a little bit more with 2024. The direction they're moving in is good, but I think there's still a lot of room to go bigger and more and more complex or more interesting.
Yeah. And the thing is being able to tie in more classes specifically gives a lot of that, like, kind of, you know, different mechanics and different play styles and stuff that you'd be able to get, you know, from a game that we kind of know a lot of the mechanics already. You know, you're able to advance, you're able to enhance. And I think that's, I mean, for me personally, I always love the options of, you know, just different characters to play as, but having unique styles of gameplay introduced is really what, you know, adds and gives a lot of life to a lot of the, you know, the fun that I've had in the game. You know, I've gone through, I think at this point I've played all the different classes at least once. I will say
I'm probably close.
I don't know.
I don't know if I've done Warlock.
Yeah, I don't think I've been able to give Warlock a fair shake yet. Just because the game I was in was a charity game and everybody was just throwing the donations to get rerolls, and I didn't really get to do much there. So I think that I need to try that again, even though it still isn't exactly gameplay that, you know, entices me, but you know, I want to give it a fair shake before I say, okay, not for me. I mean, and to be honest, like, Bard is really where I'm constantly drawn to. So doing something different than that is good to get out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah. I mean, I think we all have classes that we gravitate towards mm-hmm. a little more. My absolute favorite so far has definitely been Wizard. But I've had a lot of fun with Fighter. I've had a lot of fun with Cleric. I've had a lot of fun with Rogue. There's a lot of really, really good stuff. So yeah, there's way more content than I could ever probably hope to do, at least to any sort of like depth. But more choice is good.
You know,
more choice is good.
And that's where that time stopping power comes in. You stop time for a few friends of yours, you sit around, play a huge long session, and there you go. Instantly, you're good. So we just need to work on quantum mechanics in order to get the things that we want.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. So, you know, any artificers, which I'd hate saying it that way, or artificers out there, work on this for us. You know, it's up to you. Combine that magic and tech and give us a way to stop time.
But yeah, there's, I mean, we could muse about this all night, but there's a lot we're hoping to see. But I think, like I said, from the realm of first party, more monsters, some actual adventures, classes. And then there's a lot of third party stuff that I really like that I've backed. That's really good. That I hope will eventually make it into D&D Beyond official, because they don't seem to be wanting to turn D&D Beyond into the DM's Guild. They seem to really want to be much more curating of the content that's on D&D Beyond, which honestly I like, especially if the DM's Guild's not going away. Great. Let that be the, you throw all the things in there and then you, the cream of the crop can rise up and you can pull that into D&D Beyond. And then there's some very, very good third parties, you know, Kobold, Ghostfire, Mage Hand, MCDM, Griffin Saddlebag, then pull their good stuff that's been rigorously play tested, professionally edited and written into D&D Beyond.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. I like it a lot.
I prefer a curated version as opposed to the Wild West of like the Steam store, where there's thousands of things on there that are just not
just a lot of junk. A lot of junk.
That's a good way to put it. A lot of junk.
I definitely don't want D&D Beyond to turn into a storefront that just is anything and everything. Becomes super hard to go through. You never know if the content is good or not, because it seems most of the stuff they're pulling in has been verifiably gone through like actual balancing and play testing.
Yeah. And it's from, you know, publishers that, you know, have a proven track record too, you know, and also a lot of the stuff that's on there is, you know, it's been around for a bit, you know, they're not just pulling the very first thing that comes out from a publisher and saying, oh, we're just going to do this. It's, you know, books that have been out for a few years or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah. Or the proven track record.
Yep. Exactly.
Exactly. So yeah, let us know what you're looking forward to or what you would like to see. It's a great conversation to have. And I'd love to hear, via email or Blue Sky or on our Discord, what you are looking forward to or what you would like to see from them in the next year or two. All right, Ben, another thing that we've been asked several times, is, hey, you know, it'd be really cool. Low level legendary monsters.
What?
And you know, we've been thinking about that a lot too. And we just hadn't had time to slot something in, but tonight we are going to slot in a low level legendary monster fixer.
Yeah.
And we've been thinking on some
monster upgrader.
Monster upgrader.
Yeah. Cause we're upgrading it to a legendary status.
Fixer upper.
Fix way it's upper.
It's bad. But we're going to be talking about things, you know, CR 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 type monsters, that you normally don't see, at least officially, you normally don't see like legendary versions of, or, you know, slightly more complex things that might be able to take on a whole party or provide that, kind of apex villainy feeling, but at low levels. So Ben, let's start with you. What have you come up with for the upping of the challenge for our lower level parties?
Well, let me set the scene here. So your party has been either captured or has been invited to participate in, or, you know, some sort of, you know, Coliseum gladiator type of event. And, you know, your party's going through, you're fighting a bunch of, you know, minions and other people and stuff. You know, it's not going to be very challenging unless, you know, well, Ryan designs it and then it can just be crazy. And then there's like fire spinning and stuff. And anyways, but if you're looking for, you know, good old fashioned gladiatorial combat and everything, you know, a bunch of people fighting each other, doing stuff. But the thing about those events and, you know, Did I take a little bit of inspiration from Thor Ragnarok? Maybe. Did I think of the movie Gladiator? Maybe. The whole thing is that you have someone in there who's the champion, who is either, you know, battling the captured enemy, who, or the one who, you know, the crowd's really getting behind and you know, supporting and stuff. So based on that, I'm like, they've probably been around. They are, you know, much more than just kind of a, you know, regular mini-ny thing. So, you know, I just took the CR5 Gladiator and, you know, thought, hey, they've been there for a while. So first of all, legendary resistances, I'm throwing, giving them two. Not a whole ton, because, you know, this is still, you know, around level five or so. So, you know, you're only going to have access to, you know, maybe or a chance to, you know, a couple of them before we really need to do anything. But I figured someone who's been around in the ring for a long time is going to be able to shrug off some things. Two things specifically, because, you know, the rest of the stats aren't super great. But on top of that, because they've been in so many fights, they're good at what they do. So I think that they're going to be resistant to slashing, piercing, and bludgeoning from non-magical items. Just makes sense. But on top of that, you know, adjust the stats how you need and everything. But where legendary creatures really kind of come into play is their legendary actions. And again, I kind of thought about this. I'm theming it. You're in some sort of gladiatorial combat. So for one action, they just get another spear attack. Makes sense. You know, they're fast. They're able to do, you know, with their multi-attack, just another attack, just, you know, somewhere in there. And then I thought, well, gosh, if they're sitting there and the crowd is really loving them and they're the champion and everything, then they're going to get the crowd support. So for the cost of two actions, you have crowd support. And basically, the champion points at one character or, you know, a creature of their choice or whatever, and the crowd is going to be throwing rotten food and doing things and stuff, and, you know, into the ring. And then that one creature has disadvantage on all attacks for the next round. I thought about doing it for like the whole party or everyone that they choose, but I thought at level five, that's way too OP. So we're just going to go ahead and focus in on one person. Like, you know, gladiatorial combat, they're pointing at the one like, oh, I'm going to get you. And everyone's boo, you know, throwing stuff or whatever.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And then last but not least, I have another legendary action, which this one costs three actions. So they have, you know, three total that they can do per round. This one costs three actions, and I'm limiting it to only one use total for the entire combat. And that is open the cages. And then you add either, you add one CR2 beast to the encounter. So it adds a little bit more chaos. It adds a little bit more danger in there. And CR2 isn't too rough for, you know, a level five party that's fighting a legendary level five character, which you're probably going to have other minions that have already been fighting. So, you know, your resources are going to be a little bit low. So this is going to add to the challenge of it, but you can kind of control what you put in there based on, you know, comp of the party that you're fighting against. So whether it's like a saber-toothed tiger or a giant badger or, you know, something like that, CR2, I thought would be kind of a good level for that. And because they can only use it once per round, you're probably going to want to toss that out pretty fast, because, you know, combat's going to be like maybe 3-4 rounds tops. So yeah.
I just thought,
oh,
that's great.
I thought this, super cool. This would be pretty good for a gladiator figure to, you know, have the crowd support to show off that there's a reason why they're the champion, and then, you know, throw in the environment in there.
Yeah, no, I really like that a lot. And that sounds like a really fun encounter that's not super high level.
Yeah, especially if you're, you know, the big damage dealer on the team, and then you have rotten food being thrown at you.
Yep.
So, yay! Oh, I'm looking forward to this happening.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. So for mine, at least my first one, we're going to juice up the goblin boss.
Ooh.
Now the goblin boss got a new stat block in the monster manual, the new monster manual. But it's only got 21 health It's only a CR1, right? Mm-hmm. And it's got a cool, it's got some bonus action and reaction, which is actually super cool. This kind of pushes us a little closer to where I would want it as an actual bigger boss. So we're going to want to bump this to like CR3. We're going to want to give it some more health, and we're going to tweak its abilities. Number one, CR3, we don't want to go too crazy, but let's give it a legendary resistance, right? Let's give it one, give it that feeling of being able to shrug something off.
Yeah.
One of the things I really like about MCDM's Flea Mortals is the way they do legendary resistance is usually when the boss uses it, it temporarily nerfs them for a round or something, mm-hmm. because it's like a big expenditure of energy that something happens, right? So I like the idea. Like the goblin boss has an AC of like 17, which for a CR1 especially is pretty high. And even for a CR3, that's not bad if you have a 17 or an 18. So maybe when the legendary resistance is used, part of that resisting weakens it, and either weakens it or it loses some part of its armor or something like that. Gets a maybe a permanent -1 or -2 to its AC, mm-hmm. after it uses the legendary resistance. Something really cool, because I know legendary resistances can be very controversial in that they just full on negate a player's thing. And sometimes it can be fun to go, okay, cool. One out of three down, you know, whatever. But it also doesn't feel super great for the player. That it's just like, I just, especially at level 3, I just used my, one of my very few spell slots against this guy, and it was worthless because he uses legendary resistance on it. So yeah,
which
if you're going to do that, it's a good idea. Give him something back.
Yeah. And in fact, in episode 132, we did talk about making legendary resistance a bit more fun.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of drawing on that, or go back and listen to that episode, mm-hmm. if you want to get some cool ideas for legendary resistance, but kind of drawing on that theme. Yeah. If it uses it, oh yeah, it gets a little bit negative AC. So that's a fun thing. It's got this redirect attack too. I think you need to make it more fun. We're going to call it Take This One For Me. as a reaction. And because this is an actual like bigger boss, a legendary boss, we're going to make this 15 feet. Oh. So one of the things this boss has as a weapon is a whip that is 15 feet. Ideally, while you're doing this encounter, you want several little minion goblins. Maybe they have, you know, 7 to 10 health. Like even I think normal goblins only have like 7 to 12. Like it's very one shottable for like a level 3 party, right? So you want to have several of these goblin minions, and you want to keep them fairly close to the leader. Ideally, you want a few of them within 15 feet, and you can do that on purpose if you want. But for the reaction, someone comes in for an attack that hits. Goblin boss is just like, hey, you, get over here. Throws the whip around him, pulls him in, and that creature takes the attack instead of him.
Not bad.
Still feels good for the player, because the player gets to hit something still.
Yeah.
Attack would automatically hit. It's low-level minions, CR, you know, quarter, half, something like that on these goblins. So I'll probably one-shot it. So they take something out of the equation, but the boss gets away scot-free, right? So yeah. It's a fun little thing, that you can combine with this new like whip attack that the goblin boss can do. Maybe, the whip's got a grapple on it, or maybe it's got something where if, they don't succeed on a dex or a strength save, the goblin boss can pull them closer to him, which is super cool. I love movement-based abilities, things that can kind of shake up the battleground instead of I'm going to stand here and shoot stuff.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, fun stuff like that. In the same vein as Ben's thing, a once a battle legendary action that uses, maybe you give him two legendary actions per round or three, whichever the case may be. But whatever it is, you can only use it once, and it uses like all of the goblin boss's legendary actions. And it's a get in here, boys type thing, which pulls in additional goblins.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe you roll a D4 plus one, right? To see how many additional, these little CR quarter, CR half goblins that can basically be one shot. Mm-hmm. But more cannon fodder. Because the more of these that there are, the longer the goblin boss can live, which is kind of his whole deal. So something like that, you can easily, you got bonus, the bonus action or the legendary action of maybe a disengage and movement off turn to help him get away from bad situations. If he gets surrounded, or if there's a lot of people, or if he wants to move closer to some of his minions before his turn so that he can use his, you know, get over here thing to block an attack, could be really cool. Or to get in position to attack somebody, usually with these type of creatures, give him more than one attack, right? Mm-hmm. Give him at least two hits with his whip. So that he has the chance to be a little bit scary as far as the damage that he can put out. So yeah, there's a lot of little things like that you can do to build up and make an existing monster a little more interesting and more boss-like.
Yeah. And especially with that too, you know, a goblin boss generally isn't just kind of roaming around. They're in their, you know, kind of, you know, home area and stuff. So it's always, you know, kind of fun for something like that is, you know, if you're able to give the party like some sort of sneak preview of like just how jerky this guy is. The fact that, you know, he's pulling other goblins in to take the hit for him and stuff like that, make him treat his minions not that great. You know, like if the group is spying on the goblin encampment or position or something like that, like, you know, have him be real mean to him so that it's not out of place and it just kind of enforces it. And then, you know, they'll get a little bit more enjoyment of seeing him be such a jerk and taking him out too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and one thing I forgot that I did have written down. I love the idea of not only legendary actions, but legendary reactions.
Ooh.
That can give maybe more than one reaction per round. One of the, I don't know why I was thinking about this, but I was thinking about Yu-Gi-Oh! While I was thinking about this. And I like an ability just called, you know, you've activated my trap card. You've activated my trap. Basically a legendary reaction that the goblin can use when a character moves. And when the character moves, you can activate one of maybe two or three different types of traps that may have been set up. You don't have to put these on the field. You don't have to put these anywhere. These are things that can kind of just come up organically as you're using this legendary reaction. Like a snaring trap that the character has to make a dex save for, or they might get rooted to the spot halfway through their movement. You could have a bear trap that snaps on the person and does damage. And potentially, if they fail a save, grapples them or something. You could have a flame trap that when stepped on, quote unquote, boom, blows up and fire ignites that space and the all the spaces around it. And it's a temporary effect on the field that can then be played with or used or acted upon. There's a lot of or oil slick, you know, right?
Yeah.
Boss tosses this oil. Yeah. This puddle of grease that maybe, you know, the square, the players on and all the surrounding squares become slick and you have the possibility of falling prone or something sticky and you have the possibility of, or it slows movement, you know, something like that. They play around with it. There's so many different little trap ideas that you could use for some kind of legendary reaction thing like this.
You don't want to use this with a goblin or something really low. You probably want to do it a little bit higher, but I just thought of something that I thought would be fun. And I kind of want to do it and like maybe add it to as a subclass feature for something. I don't know, like in Arcane Trickster, it seems like this would work. Maybe, I don't know, but as a reaction, you stick an explosive on someone as they run away from you. I don't know, have them do like a dex save so that like if they hit it, then they know that it's there and then they can take their action to try to, you know, get it off. Or if they don't, then they just explode after a round or something. I don't know.
The oldie sticky
like
bomb.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. I don't know what made that come to mind, but I'm like, oh, you know, it'd be really weird. Like as someone's running away, you stick some dynamite in the back of their belt or something. I don't know. Maybe that's like too much wow somehow coming back into my mind or something.
Again, look to MMO bosses.
Yeah.
Those can be, honestly, those can be great, great inspiration for boss fights and boss encounters for sure. I've got many a good idea from an MMO encounter. And yes. Kind of turned it and shaped it into a D&D encounter. There's one other thing I was thinking about. I wanted to do, because we had talked about, you know, buffed up creatures, animals, right? So I thought, you know, maybe a CR2, CR3, CR4, dire bear as a boss. And this would be kind of something that was a little more solo, not a lot of minions necessarily. It would be not necessarily high AC, but lots of HP that you'd have to work through. You could have a legendary resistance as well, that maybe when it used it, maybe it has a very high speed, and when it uses it, it gets tripped up and its speed lowers for the rest of the encounter. You know, that's something, give the players something back if a legendary resistance is used. But things that you could do with it, you've got, you know, bites, claws, but then maybe you have leaps, something that can cover distance and end with an attack, something that covers distance and ends in an AoE. Around some sort of a cleave,
yeah,
type attack, a roar, right, that could frighten or deafen or impose disadvantage in some way is really cool. We've talked about the bloodied condition before, which is just essentially, it's from previous editions. It's been made note of some in 2024, talked about basically when a creature hits half health, things happen or things change. You could easily do, like a bloodlust when you hit half health, and maybe your speed increases by like 15 or 20 feet, your, attacks do an extra dice of damage, but your AC reduces to basically nothing. Like every attack is going to hit. because it has just thrown caution to the wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So something like that, you can have a charge. Charge attacks can be really cool because you can basically measure a line and go, okay, this guy is being targeted by the charge attack, but anybody else in between this guy, this boss, and its target is also going to have to do something as the charge smashes through or smashes by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a lot of fun stuff you can play around with beyond just here's a bear with a bite and claw deck.
Yeah. And the thing is too, is that the neat thing about Bloodlust or Bloodied is that it can activate so many different things. Like as soon as something gets bloodied, it generally becomes fiercer, like, you know, we've kind of already talked about. But I like the idea of that's when the countdown happens. Like you can give a legendary beast of some sort, like a massive amount of HP. As soon as it gets bloodied, maybe it goes into such a frenzy that like it starts the countdown. Like there might not be enough damage being put out. Like if this thing is real beastly, maybe one of the characters is down or really low or something. And at that point, basically the group just needs to survive as, they've got like maybe two or three more rounds left before this thing is going to burn itself out because it is just so ferocious and mad. And
yeah, those ticking time bomb fights can be really fun.
Yeah. Like all that amps up, but it's going to die. Like as soon as it's bloodied, it is just seeing red. There's no stopping it. And it's just ferocious, but it is bleeding out like incredibly so. And on top of that, the more damage that, you know, your players give it, the faster it might go. Like they might, gain a round or something like that. Like, you know, add some sort of ticking clock to that could be kind of cool in, you know, a legendary fight with something that's like, you know, like a big beast that is, you know, legendarily, you know, haunted a forest for, you know, 100 years or something.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like ticking time bombs or the just survive for three rounds type mm-hmm. fights because it makes players get a lot more creative, right? In some ways, it turns into sometimes less into I got to kill everything and more, okay, what can I do to survive? Where can I hide? What can I do to impede mm-hmm. my enemies, that sort of thing. So yeah, I like friends. That a lot. And help your friends. Yes. Very much so. So yeah, these are just a few of the like ideas we had for like lower level legendary creatures. There isn't a lot of them that exist, especially officially. You don't see much in the way of low level legendary creatures, and it's a shame. It really is a shame because a huge chunk of games happen at low levels. And if you're saving all your coolest stuff, all your biggest fights, all your most interesting mechanics for tier 3 and 4, there's a lot of people who just will never see them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'll add this on to I want a new monster book. I want a new monster book that's got some really cool lower level legendary creatures.
Yeah.
Get some cool design in there. I think there's a lot of space to play around in there. And I think a lot of people would be super happy to have these tougher or more standout monsters or villains in lower level play space than they do now, at least officially.
I totally agree.
All right, Ben. With that out of the way, I think you had a reminder that you wanted to give everybody real quick.
Yeah. So if you did a pre-order for the 2024 bundle of the player handbook, DMG, and then also the monster manual on D&D Beyond, and also got the digital version and stuff, they gave you a bunch of really cool bonus stuff. One of them being that golden dragon figurine for Sigil, because the city's Sigil, the gaming table platform was Sigil. Anyways, since Sigil's not a thing anymore, they wanted to kind of make good on that. So before, they did say that they're going to give out a dice set as well as a character sheet backdrop. Well, I did get my email saying that the character sheet backdrop, it's instantly there. You can use it and everything, but you do have to redeem the digital dice with the code that they send you. So if you know, your D&D Beyond emails, you know, tend to go to the spam folder or something like that, take a look. Mine came in on January 28th. So yeah, just make sure that if you did that pre-order that you go in and get your digital dice set, because you know what? Hoarding digital dice is just as much fun as hoarding regular dice.
And hopefully they will allow us to select different digital dice per character.
Oh my gosh. That would make the world so handy. A better place.
It would. Really would.
Yeah.
Be very handy. cool. Thank you, Ben. Yeah. And with that, of course, before we wrap up, we usually like to talk about what we've been doing in our own games. Ben, have you played since the last time that we talked?
I have not been able to. Working through a lot of stuff. Yeah. I will say, though, that our niece is planning on DMing a game, and she has invited us to join. So,
That's so cool.
If that does kick off at some point, I'm sure I'll be reporting on it, and I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool. Very, very cool. I, interestingly, have played twice.
Oh.
Since we last talked, because I played like right after the last time we recorded. And I just played 2 days ago.
Very so, nice.
It was a crazy two sessions, because before break, before we left, my party had the big decision to make. One of their members had been kidnapped, probably tortured. And there was this big trouble brewing between this mercenary guild and the local constabulary who are currently mostly being run by this one of the big villains from this villain party. And so the party had a big decision to make. Do they go try and rescue their friend immediately, potentially allowing this giant conflict in the middle of the city district to take place? Or do they go try and stop the warden, this person who's over the constabulary, who they have lots of run-ins with, to try and, you know, essentially cut off the head, yeah. Right? So they had a big discussion, like, what would their captured party member want? And, you know, what's the greater good? It's moral quandaries, right? We've talked mm-hmm. about this. And my party is currently level 8, which, you know, they're starting to get up there. This is something that is really great for high-level D&D as well, because there are some problems that can't just be solved with fists and magic, spell flinging, right? Sometimes you have to sit down and go, okay, we're not going to be able to do both of these at the same time. What do we do? What are the pros and cons? What are the outcomes potential that we have to weigh? So they got information, did some sneaking, and ended up ambushing the warden at a dinner she was throwing for the officers before this attack on the bazaar and the mercenary group was supposed to take place. They did a really good job infiltrating and sneaking in. They even disguised self as the person to tell the innkeeper, whose large establishment they were meeting at in private rooms and stuff, hey, if you hear anything, that's, you know, we're just sparring. Yeah. It's just training. Like, it's just, don't worry about it.
That's,
and smart. I was like, dang, that was solid. That's that was real good. So they end up fighting her, and it was a crazy deal. But they ended up killing her before she was able to use her ring that all the villain party have to teleport away. which was really cool. So they were able to do that. And then the next session basically picked up right there after that. It was a big battle, right after that battle. And they had to stealthily get out of there. And it took them a little while. Dice rolls were not the best. And it took them a while to get out of the inn, to get back to their inn. They had to rest. They had to eat. They had to talk about what they were going to try and do, because they had had a scry that kind of showed almost exactly where their companion, their friend was. So they ended up resting and they decided, okay, we got to go. Like, it's been too long. We're getting nervous. We just offed, you know, this very powerful person, who's been a thorn in our side and been kind of out to get us for quite a while. So they went, they snuck into the campus of a magical college that the wife of one of the big bads runs. Snuck in at night. They were able to get in. They were able to take out just the roving guards. Again, it's a school, right? Yeah. There wasn't a ton of necessarily tons of stuff.
I would not.
And then they found a secret door, or in this case, a large stone slab in the floor that they ended up having to manually move. So it just took more time and more time, but they were able to finally get in, went down, found this like almost laboratory like torture area. They found some dead people. It was you know, not great stuff. Yeah. Right. And then they look into one of the final cells, and there's their friend kind of chained up, hanging from chains, yay, hanging from the ceiling, them. Arms up. So they rushed in to try and get him out, right? Because they had been captured for like two plus days at this point. But as they rushed in, they saw they were just, you know, beaten up, just gashes, like scar, they really bad shape, right? And as they rushed in, they saw that the character had a sign around their neck that read, "A life for a life. You should not have meddled where you didn't belong, and now you will all pay the price."
Oh no.
The character had a few seconds, and basically, because I had kind of given the player of this character, who's playing, you know, a different character right now, we've been in conversation. Again, this is a really big deal when this type of stuff happens, especially if like player character gets captured.
Yeah.
Make sure you're constantly checking in with your players, and make sure you're on the same page. So we had lots of different conversations. But he didn't know exactly what I was going to do. So he basically, you know, raised his head up a little bit. He's like, "It's all right. You've got to run." And then a mana bomb that had been implanted into his chest went off.
Fully consumed him.
One of the characters who was next to him barely made it out, and only because one of the other characters rolled super high and is able to pull her back. The druid was not so lucky and caught the tail end of the mana bomb blast. And mana bombs mana bombs are a thing in my world. Basically, think of them as like this just expanding circle of power.
Yeah.
That expands to a point and then vanishes. And then everything that was in that circle is just gone. Just
gone. Yeah.
Like full disintegrated, everything just leaves like a sphere of whatever it was. The druid caught the tail end of the blast and fully lost their foot.
Oh.
So foot gone. Just completely gone. And of course, the character who had the bomb implanted in their chest was no more.
Yeah.
And that's where we left off. And that's where we're going to pick back up. It was very, it was very crazy ending, very emotional session. And it's going to continue to be a very emotional session next time we play here, in like a week and a half. So, yeah, it's, character death is hard. Character death is very hard. And this one, I think everybody knew it was a possibility. And I think everybody knew that if they delayed, that possibility was higher. And the bad rolls on timing during the session, basically kind of sealed the fate. So yeah, very, very rough session, very hard. Cause this is a character that, the player had been playing for like two plus years. So we will deal with the aftermath of that next session.
Wow. That's a tough one, but I mean, good for you and also the player to be able to, you know, talk it through, communicate the whole time. And I am glad that it worked out well. And I mean, I don't know if in your favor is the right way to put it, but it sounds like it was expertly handled. So good job on that.
Yeah. It's never easy when a character dies, especially a character that you've played for a long time.
Yeah.
But in most worlds, at least in my opinion, actions should have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And especially when you telegraph them or make sure your players are aware of them. And in this case, they did one good thing, but unfortunately they couldn't do both. And so, it was hard. That was a hard, from a DM perspective, that was really hard to go to sleep after that session. I was up for a few more hours into the wee hours of the night because DM brain always gets you going.
Yeah. Yep. No, I hear you every time.
But it was incredible session.
Yeah. Every time after I play, it's always a few hours of downtime before I go to bed. I can't imagine being in that situation and then still having to decompress after that. So yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, but, yeah, looking forward to hearing really more.
I am looking forward to the next session as well. It's going to be wild.
Yeah, sounds like
it'd be very emotional. Very emotional as the characters deal with what just happened. And with that, ending, you know, to end on a high note.
Yeah.
thank you, everyone, so much for listening. It's always a pleasure talking to Ben. And just getting to chat about D&D and stuff we really love. But of course, before we go, Ben, why don't you tell everyone real quickly where we can be reached?
Of course. We have a few different places. The fastest and simplest way is going to be on Blue Sky. If you're looking for us there, the show is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. So feel free to follow us on Blue Sky, all those places, because, you know, we're there. You reach out. We'll respond, you know, fun stuff like that. Find out when new episodes are up or just follow us for our random musings or whatever. Aside from that, there is always our email address. You can send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. You know, if you don't want everything out in the public, this is kind of the best place to do it. You know, we read our emails, respond when we can, things like that. And then last but not least, of course, is going to be our Discord server. It's a great place. There's a ton of people on there. Super nice. You know, we talk about D&D. We, you know, get discussions going. People ask questions about, you know, thoughts on how to run something, what we would do in certain situations, as well as, like, you know, random fun stuff and everything like that. So you can find a link to that on our website, dndiscussions.com. Which has a link to that, all of our Blue Sky accounts, basically everything there that you're ever going to find, as well as every single episode that we've ever done. Now, on top of that, if you're sitting here like, wow, I bet these guys have never played and they don't even know what they're talking about. Well, you would be wrong. I can prove it because if you take a listen to Plus Five to Hit, that is an actual play podcast that I'm on. And, you know, I'm playing a barbarian and we're having fun doing stuff. So check out Plus Five to Hit. And if you look at campaign three, Ryan was in that for, or campaign two, Ryan was in that for a while with me. And then also campaign one is all Ryan. So you know what? Guess what? You can listen to us play if you really want to. We maybe know a little bit about what we're talking about just from experience. But anyways, so aside from that, everybody, thank you for listening to us. Thank you very much for supporting D&D Discussions. We love chatting with you on our Discord. We love talking to you on Blue Sky, you know, wherever. Thank you very much. Ryan, it is always a pleasure talking to you. I can't wait to hear what happens next in your game. And even more on top of that, I can't wait to talk about whatever's coming up next that, you know, is going to be announced once this drops tomorrow. So,
yep.
Yeah, we'll find out what it is. All right. And with that, everybody, again, thank you very much for your love and support. We love you very much. Roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.